somebody's heart or another animal's heart generally customary practice in other countries? Do you do that in Sweden, Selena?
Yeah. We have, when we turn 18, they send us to the forest and we have to slay a moose with our bare hands and then we eat the heart and then we're secured a happy marriage.
Happy days after Thanksgiving.
Happy arranged marriage.
Yes. Yes.
Danny was eating a heart. They were celebrating the day of thanks, is what they were doing.
That's what they were doing.
That's
exactly.
It's Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
You got to be thankful for all those hearts that you can get.
What was the flavor of the heart in the show? Wasn't it like a big
gummy bear?
Gummy bear. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so disgusting.
That's delicious.
Can you imagine? Oh, no, gross.
You guys listening, welcome. Game of Bones podcast.
But getting back to this talk about Danny consuming the heart, this was a hell of a way to open the chapter because you're like, okay, there's this heart on the table and it's steaming. Okay, Khal Drogo is, you know, standing next to Danny, his elbows covered in blood. There's some guys behind him with some stone knives and a dead horse carcass. And oh my God, she's going to eat the heart.
Yep. Mm.
She just reaches in to get it. And it's like, oh my God, that's.
She's been practicing. She's been eating dried pieces of horse flesh.
I know, that's so disgusting.
Or she's been chewing on horse flesh.
Clotted horse blood. Whilst they've been drinking clotted milk. Who knew that clotted milk could get you tipsy, guys?
I don't like
the
word
clotted.
There were
so many clots in this chapter. I was just, oh man.
Think about it though. As kids, as teenagers, just buy a couple gallons of milk before the weekend, leave them outside, and then when the weekend comes around, just drink curded clotted milk.
That's what we did.
Right? That's what you, but the moose milk though. It's,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Wouldn't you just have blue cheese?
Yeah, it's got to be pussy, pus-filled.
Oh, stop. Okay, I'm going to stop you right there, Zach.
I was just going to say about the heart thing, I love how strong of a visual it was for the show as well. And I love how it's like actual, a real sort of a literary thing. Like, wasn't it, there was some queen in some book about vampires who would like bathe in the blood of virgins and eat their hearts to retain like eternal youth.
Yeah,
and
she
stuff.
Wasn't a queen, but it was okay, Countess Elizabeth Bathory.
Fine.
It was the blood countess.
The heart was steaming in the cool evening air when Khal Drogo set it before her, raw and bloody. His arms were red to the elbow. Behind him, his blood riders knelt on the sand beside the corpse of the wild stallion, stone knives in their hands. The stallion's blood looked black in the flickering orange glare of the torches that ringed the high chalk walls of the pit.
So apparently the tents are made of chalkboards. Just old chalk bits from schools they've conquered and stolen from the other castles out of Vaestokrat.
Do you think this is like going to be the new punishment for not making your SAT scores as a school? Is that the Dothraki come and steal all your chalkboards?
And then they make you eat hearts.
And what an experience that is, the sensation of eating a heart, as detailed here by George R. R. Martin.
You know the thing about Danny eating the heart, though? I tweeted this out. I know it's a little bit random, but in the later book, like we've seen this in the show already, Joffrey names his sword Heart Eater, and it suddenly occurred to me that there's like a bit of a connection there. And I just thought, it's Danny.
That's just the most Heart Eater. Can you think of like way to be an ass?
It's a stupid word.
It's not, though. It's awesome, but it's also a supreme dick move. This is Heart Eater, everyone. You guys want to go get a beer? Oh, don't mind my sword. It's made of Valyrian steel, and its name is Heart Eater. So don't piss me off.
Heart Eater.
But Joffrey can't even use his sword. I mean, let's be realistic here.
See, you don't know that, though, right? Mm. He's the king, okay? The king of the Andals and all the other shit.
That's true.
Yeah, well, hearts are definitely symbolic, which is why you see it in these more than one instance, you know, right here in this chapter, and as Selena pointed out.
And I love how this is supposed to be this this great omen for the future of the child inside her. I don't know if you have this quote, but I would just really like to read that one when they're talking about what would happen if she couldn't keep this heart down. It said, "If she choked on the blood or retched up the flesh, the omens were less favorable. The child might be stillborn or come forth weak, deformed, or female."
Or female.
I was like, what, George?
Well, we know what your mom
Uncle
didn't
Ray.
Do, Selena.
Yeah, she retched up the heart.
Here's the thing, though. I think I was thinking about that as soon as I read it, and I put it in my notes as well, but I think it's just more important. Clearly, it's only the Khalasar or Khaleesi that has this ceremony where they eat the heart. I don't think all the Thraki women are forced to try and eat the heart. I think it's just the leaders, which is why there's that much more emphasis placed on her being able to stomach it, because you want the leader to give birth to a son so that the monarchy can continue, you know, that sort of thing. Whereas I think everybody, the biological understanding is that you need women. It's just, you know, for the leader.
For the tough jobs, you got to get the men.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course.
Because they're the only ones that can grow sweet braids.
Right. Well, that's what they think until Danny comes in and like takes over the.
And they're like, wait, you can wear blonde braids too? That looks good.
I know. She's never cut her hair.
It's got to be a wig. So they're all going crazy. When I say all of them, I mean like the 5,000 people in this giant tent. There's apparently two other calls, which are kings, hanging out. And they've got their blood riders like seated beneath them in the throne room. And there's basically like it's tiered off, sort of like a concert or an NFL game. You've got the people with money, and then you've got people that kind of wanted to go and really had to go a long way to get there. And then in the back, you've got the deformed people and the old guys.
Guys with braids shorter than their manhoods.
Yes. And so in this tiered sort of theater-like setting, all this shit's happening, and everyone just starts chanting that this little baby inside of her is going to be the stallion who mounts the world. It's a very strong claim. And all the other calls aren't really pissed off. You ever notice that? I figured they might be kind of mad about it.
What I really wanted to know more about, and I guess this book kind of, this chapter got me into it, was these old women that are former Khaleesi's. Because it is said that, you know, when Drago, if he meets an untimely end, or it's not unforeseeable that Daenerys will one day be part of this group of, like, advisors, as it were. They're able to see into the future and that kind of thing. You know, kind of like the fates, you know, of old, of Greek mythology. But I wonder why, you know, when Drogo is no longer with Dany later in later books or in the TV series, how she's able to prevent another, you know, call from kind of taking power. Why she isn't sent to be with these older former Khaleesi's instead, and I assume it's probably because of the dragons.
Well, no, it's because she doesn't want to either. I mean, she defies everything, mm-hmm. really, after Khal Drogo dies, and she has all those people who are around her swear allegiance to her once they see her emerge from the fire at the end of this book. And so I think that that's certainly what plays into it. But yeah, I was thinking pretty much the same thing you brought up, Eric. It's kind of like the fates. Kind of are they sort of these one-eyed old crones? You know, that maybe they can only see out of one eye, and they're just kind of hovering over a fire and predicting the future. It had a little bit of mysticism to it. I mean, it's weird because you go from a lot of chapters we've just spent kind of in King's Landing, where things are normal, right, and you don't kind of have any of this magic going on, and then you're automatically transported to the next chapter to the stuff that makes it a little bit more fantasy-like. So it was cool to actually come back to this, because I feel like we've been away from it for so long.
I hate it.
You hate it?
just the tents and the stuff. I'm just like, well, go back to the badass horses and like plates of armor that need stretched, because we've been drinking too much wine.
And Shaga,
exactly.
Shaga, son of Delph. But wait a minute, because the way this chapter ends, Zach, surely you were pleased by that.
I just don't care that much about Viserys and Dany, honestly.
I love it. I love seeing, because all her life she's assumed that Viserys is the blood of the dragon, but in this chapter we finally learn that he was the weak one and she's actually the one. Maybe it's just the girl power aspect of it all that I enjoy, but I really like that it's her that's the special one and not him.
I'm more for Arya's girl power.
Me too.
If I had to choose an allegiance, it's like...
You don't have to choose.
I believe that you do.
You have all the girl power. Where's my brother? He ought to have come back now for the feast.
I saw his grace this morning. He told me he was going to the Western Market in search of wine.
Wine?
Dany said doubtfully. Viserys could not abide the taste of the fermented mare's milk the Dothraki drank. She knew that. And he was oft at the bazaars these days, drinking with the traders who came in the great caravans from east to west. He seemed to find their company more congenial than hers.
Wine,
Ser Jor confirmed.
And he has some thought to recruit men for his army from the sellswords who guard the caravans.
So Viserys is planning some shit.
He is. Yeah. He has a vague plan, even though it's a short-sighted one.
I think he's just hanging out, not with the horse people, because they're just mean to him.
I know.
Like, he just wants to see some people. He's going to the traders because he's hoping that maybe someone will recognize him. And he's mad because they make him walk and they don't allow him to wash his clothes and stuff. It's kind of, I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
And, I do too.
Danny's even worried for his safety, knowing that King Robert is out after the both of them. And you get that insight, though, as one of you guys had pointed out, that, you know, he's up to something. You know, he's trying to plan his army, and he's even trying to leverage the dragon eggs. Jorah brings up the fact that he had caught him trying to steal the eggs. And Dany thinks about it for a while, saying, oh, why would my brother do that to me? And then she even goes as far and says, well, if he wants them, he can have them. You know, if he thinks that it's going to make a difference. And she's just so sympathetic to him up to the point where he shows up in this drunken stupor.
In this conversation that they're sharing right now, we finally sort of get the actual complete 100% reveal that Jorah is not just, he's not even just for, he's not for Viserys at all. Like, it began, he was like, your grace this, your grace that. But now they're so deep into Dothraki territory, he's like, hey, your brother's out and he's trying to sell your eggs, which turns out they're more important than jewels and stuff because they're just as rare and they're pretty much as decorative. So he's out trying to get some money to buy some sellswords. And she's like, well, don't you mean your king, my king, our king? He's my brother and all this shit. He's like, well, you're right. He is your brother, but all the other stuff he's not.
Yeah, I think he's really, he realizes that Dany is in a position of greater power than Viserys. You know, and as a spy or whatever it is that he is for the realm, you know, I think he is very wise to side himself with Dany, you know, and kind of get to know her better and that kind of thing, as opposed to always hanging around with Viserys, who is bad news and is not going to very clearly is not going to last very long.
It's just messed up to me because, like I said, he began a certain way until he kind of got them out of range and got them to where they wanted to be emotionally. And even in this dialogue, Daenerys is basically saying, my mom died when she gave birth to me and all my other family members were dead. And the only person that was there for me was Viserys. And he told me and he allowed me to learn about my entire family, who was a great family. And he told me everything and basically raised me and protected me and brought me from place to place. So I'm going to give him a little bit of slack for sucking these past few weeks. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, she does have
even give him the eggs. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, she offers them to him even. But I think it's interesting because that is contrasted to a little later in the chapter after Viserys points his sword at her, and George R. R. Martin begins writing, you know, of course, in Dany's perspective, her former brother, or the man that had been her brother, and he's describing Viserys' actions in this way before Viserys has actually died, because there's a limit, there's a line that has been crossed where Dany completely sees Viserys as no longer being her brother, as a result of what he's in the process of doing. You know, the knife to her belly button and that kind of thing.
From the lurch in his step, she could tell at once that Viserys had found his wine and something that passed for courage. He was wearing his scarlet silks, soiled and travel-stained. His cloak and gloves were black velvet, faded from the sun. His boots were dry and cracked, his silver-blonde hair matted and tangled. A long sword swung from his belt in a leather scabbard. The Dothraki eyed the sword as he passed. Dany heard curses and threats and angry muttering rising all around her, like a tide. The music died away in a nervous stammering of drums. A sense of dread closed around her heart.
Go to him,
she commanded Ser Jorah.
Stop him. Bring him here. Tell him he can have the dragon's eggs if that's what he wants.
The knight rose swiftly to his feet.
Looking forward to this.
Where's my sister?
Viserys shouted, his voice thick with wine.
I've come for her feast. Tonight we dine in hell. How dare you presume to eat without me? No one eats before the king. Where is she? The whore can't hide from the dragon.
He stopped beside the largest of the three fire pits, peering around at the faces of the Dothraki. There were 5,000 men in the hall, but only a handful who knew the common tongue. Yet even if his words were incomprehensible, you had only to look at him to know that he was drunk. Ser Jorah went to him swiftly, whispered something in his ear, and took him by the arm, but Viserys wrenched free.
Keep your hands off me. No one touches the dragon without leave.
Danny glanced anxiously up at the high bench. Khal Drogo was saying something to the other Khals beside him. Khal Jomo grinned, and Khal Ogo began to guffaw loudly.
Guffaw. I love guffaw. It's my favorite word.
Khal like, Ogo?
Ogo.
Ogo. Ojo.
Ogo.
Lego my ego.
Here's Mojo.
Dr. Evil was a call at a point in his life. Yeah, call yeah. Evil, exactly.
Now, what does he call him, though? He calls him Khal Raggett?
Yeah, that's not explained. He calls him Khal Raggett, but I assume it's like vermin, you know.
The sound of laughter made Viserys lift his eyes.
Khal Drogo. I'm here for the feast.
He staggered away from Ser Jorah, making to join the three Khals on the high bench. Khal Drogo rose, spat out a dozen words in Dothraki, faster than Danny could understand, and pointed.
Khal Drogo says your place is not on the high bench.
Ser Jorah translated for our brother.
Khal Drogo says your place is there.
Khaleesi.
Khaleesi.
Viserys glanced where the Khal was pointing, at the back of the long hall in a corner by the wall, deep in shadow, so Bedamin would need not to look at them, set the lowest of the low, raw, unblooded boys, old men with clouded eyes and stiff joints, and the dim-witted and the maimed, far from the meat and farther from the honor.
That is no place for a king.
Go on, Micah.
Is place.
Khal Drogo answered in the common tongue that Danny had taught him.
For a sorefoot king, a cart. Bring cart for Khal Raggett.
So basically, everyone's going crazy, much as if Micah were the actual person to be.
Micah, if you were Khal Drogo in this situation,
oh my God,
that would be amazing. Just sitting back with the braid past your ass, just sitting back pissed off at this dude.
I think Micah was Khal Drogo in a former life.
I think he was too.
For Sorefoot King.
Yeah.
So basically, right. Everyone's pissed off because Viserys, like someone that is not very smart, pulled out his sword. And he's like, oh, they can't hurt me. It's cool. He like basically turns around to Danny and Jorah all drunk. He's like, no, it's cool. They can't kill me. This is like their church or something. It's all good. And he's like, listen, you dogs. I'm the king of stuff. And now you must listen to me. And shit goes poorly for him.
We did overlook just very quickly. She decided on a name for her son.
I know. She pulled a Bella Swan. I love it.
It's terrible. she successfully fused, perhaps yes. More successfully than Bella Swan. She successfully fused
it's no the Renesmee,
names
I'll tell you.
Of family members. Anyway, she called it Rygo. She's going to call it Rygo or Rago.
Rago.
Mm-hmm. But it's a cross between Drogo and Rygar. Targaryen,
who is so funny.
Actually her brother. I thought he was an uncle, but
although they are
with
Targaryens.
The Targaryens, yeah, yes. You never know.
No,
so. It said he died before she was born, so that helps.
Yeah, you know what I love is that not only was this name like a little sort of Renesmee-esque feel, but later in the chapter when Drogo calls her Daenerys, I don't know about you guys, but I just could not help but think that Khal Drogo is like Victor Crumb.
Yeah,
with the Hermione-nini. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like Daenerys. Yeah.
When you're outnumbered in the way that Viserys was outnumbered, it's just not smart or wise or anything to, and especially put a sword to your pregnant sister. Like,
you know what I think that like up until this point when I was watching the show before I'd read the books, I really enjoyed Game of Thrones. I thought it was great, but I think that the moment that really hooked me, like the one where I knew this was gonna be like me and the show, we were gonna be like this, was whenever he just died and Danny in the show she looks at him and in the book she thinks it. She looks at Viserys's sort of melted face and she has this just completely detached look on her face and she says, "He was no dragon. Fire cannot kill a dragon." And it all came together, and I was like, oh my god, she has fire magic, and the dragons are going to come, and I got like so excited, and I think it's my favorite moment from the first series.
Yeah, it was that moment of realization.
Yes, when you realized, like, really, she was something special, she wasn't just a random character.
I wouldn't call it realization, I would call it, it's definitely poignant, it's definitely interesting, but she doesn't yet know that she has power.
I think for the audience...
She knows that he doesn't have the power, so it's like less power that he ever held over her. Like, you know, she doesn't know that she's magic. She just knows that
I did in that moment. Like, I think the audience did.
Yeah, using context clues. It was like, well, if it's not him, then it's probably her. There's the last two remaining people. Yeah. And something did happen with the hot water early on in the... It was right when she was getting cleaned up for Drogo at the beginning of this
steaming.
Book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the water that no one could ever step into if they weren't magical. You know, they didn't say that, but basically it said that. It's like...
Yeah.
It's like John's actually Ned's son? it's like one of those things. Like, okay,
promise me Ned.
Dragons are coming and promise me Ned everything. Everyone depends on Ned, and that's no fair.
It's true. There's one question, though, I wanted to bring up reading through this chapter, kind of going over a lot of what happened when she was eating the heart. And they were looking into the fire and talking about her child. Do we know with 100% certainty that her child is really dead?
Yes.
And I know... You think so?
I wondered
didn't
what had
we
happened.
Didn't see it?
His hair's way too full to be dead.
But I don't want to say yes if it turns out we don't, but I thought we saw it dead. Like, deformed. Didn't it describe it in the book that it was, like, deformed and curled in on itself or something gross?
I had to think back to the show, and I feel like I remember them. Didn't they sacrifice Khal Drogo so that the sun could live, and then the sun didn't live?
It was
like, take one life for another or something, and then both of them
the
died, and I was like, what
the hell? Them, yeah.
Stick around we'll and see as the show progresses, people.
Since we're reading aloud, we're always taking my owns before we get to this part of the show, but mine has to be Fire Cannot Kill a Dragon. It's like the ultimate own.
Oh, Danny's own reflection of what happened to Viserys?
Yeah, it's like he deserved to die because if he'd been a real dragon, like he would have
that wouldn't
not
have
died.
Happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't have even phased him. Yeah,
exactly.
You're right. Yeah, my own is Viserys' death. The means and the methods. Khal Drogo, you know, is still abiding by sacred scripture to not draw his sword or even have any blood.
I'm gonna have to give my own to Khal Drogo when he dissed Viserys to the corner of people like that was full of armless children and old people. So. I'm going to have to give it to him.
Yeah. Yep. Way to, like, not recognize any authority but your own.
I just thought it was perfect. Just another way to demean him some more.
I agree.
Yeah. Mine was, we talked about it a little bit, but when it says in the book, Viserys was weeping, she saw weeping and laughing both at the same time, this man who had once been her brother. And it's from that point on that they just refer to him as being her brother in the past tense. She no longer recognizes him as being family.
Yeah.
That's mean.
It's all those incest genes coming to a head.
Yeah.
He's going crazy.
You're seeing the same thing with Joffrey and the other two kids. Like, they sort of make a comment at some point that when you do this incest thing, like, you have, you know, 50-50 chance that your child's going to be...
murderous and
be
fucking
good
crazy.
Or not. Yeah, exactly. And they sort of rolled the dice on that one.
If you have your owns that you would like to select from this portion of text, or perhaps some that we have done before, or maybe that we'll do in the future, hop into your time machine, tweet toward us at Game of Owns on Twitter. It's spelt the way it sounds. The end of it is not a Z, it's an S. So don't try to be cool or leet or a Hacksaw. You know who you are.
Did you just mean leet like L33T?
I did.
That is crazy reference, man. If you want to email us, you can do that at contact@gameofowns.com. That is our email address. We are each individually on Twitter, and you can find that address on our website, actually, at gameofowns.com.
And if you want more of me, you can go to hypeable.com. And it's not just me. It's a lot of random stuff about lots of different fandoms. We've got a whole host of different podcasts over there. So if that's your thing, we've got Who Hype, we've got Once Bull, we've got Vampire Hype, we've got Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, Glee Chat, and lots more. I should do this for a living.
Wait, you don't?
Wait, what?
Spoiler alert.
So if you guys have been listening, you know that there's a contest to add a suffix to our names in the vein of Sir Barristan the Bold, blah, blah, blah. We've got a handful of them on Twitter. And we're just not going to end it yet because we're still looking for a full range of badassery that we can choose between. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I'm really surprised no one's used Eric the Fishwife yet, Selena. No one's plagiarized you.
I'm so sorry about that.
That's because they know that I will find them.
They will find much better ones for Eric.
So keep those coming and all that random stuff, and we'll read some more of your tweets and stuff next episode.
Before we leave, you can rate and review us on iTunes, and we do appreciate your 5-star ratings, but keep them coming, and perhaps we'll read them on future episodes.
Perhaps we will. Perhaps we'll read them on Wednesday's episode. Perhaps we'll read them on Fridays.
And if you're anticipating a threat this week, oh wait, somebody's calling me.
It's the bat phone, guys. The bat phone. Sorry, the bat phone has interrupted.
It's like he's gotta go. He's gonna go fight crimes.
It's George R. R. Martin
coming with the threat.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys on Wednesday.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.